Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Michael Adams here with another episode of the Rugby League Digest. As you can probably see from the title of this episode, this is not the next chapter of the Super League War. That is in the can, as they say, and will be coming to you in three parts from next week. Some really momentous Super League action on your way. But this week I wanted to turn the spotlight away from us, away from the Super League War, just to tell everyone about a great new podcast, BRL Moments in Time. So you're going to hear an interview I did with one of the co-hosts of that show and a friend of the RLD, Chris Leeson. I had a great chat with Chris about all things Brisbane Rugby League, and you can hear much more about the Brisbane Rugby League on his new podcast. So I think this is a long overdue project, and I'm looking forward to learning a lot more about the Brisbane Rugby League as we go along. So I don't really know too much about it. This is one of the reasons I really wanted to get Chris on and to give him a platform on the RLD this week, just because it's pretty easy, especially if you grew up in Sydney like I did, to just see the Sydney comp, which, you know, through several iterations became the NRL we know today. You see it as a stand-in for rugby league, but I'm sure anyone who listens to this show will know that that's far from the case. The NRL doesn't mean rugby league, and the New South Wales Rugby League in the past didn't mean rugby league. So if you're like me and you don't know much about the history of the BRL, this new podcast is a great chance to get an education and get to know better the players and officials and the rest of the people who made up one of the most significant competitions in rugby league history. So you can download the first, as we're releasing this, the first couple of episodes are out now. So it's BRL Moments in Time. You can go to iTunes or Spotify, all the usual places. It's available. I urge you to please download and subscribe and get stuck into it, as I'm planning to do. As I said, we'll be back with the continuation of the Super League War next week. Andy will be joining me for Chapter 28. And as I said, it's a three-parter that I'm very excited to be able to share with you all. So you can look forward to that from next week. For this week, please enjoy my chat with Chris Leeson. Welcome back to the Rugby League Digest. I'm Michael Adams, and I'm here with Chris Leeson, host of the brand new BRL History Podcast, BRL Moments in Time. Chris, welcome to the show and welcome to the Rugby League History Podcasting Fraternity.
Yeah, thanks very much, Michael. Thank you. Pleasure to be a part of the community.
The pleasure's all mine. I'm really excited about what you're doing. I think it's a much needed corrective to the dominant rugby league narrative in Australia. So I want to get into all of that, your reasons for starting the podcast, what the podcast is all about, all the rest of it. To start off with, I wanted to get to know a bit more about you and for our listeners to do the same. So you're in Brisbane, I take it?
Yep, that's right. Well, I'm actually living in Ipswich at the moment, which is just west of Brisbane, for those who might not be aware of the geography in southeast Queensland. But yeah, I grew up in Brisbane, and from the age of about 7 or 8, I was watching footy on the TV with my dad, and we would go out to local grounds and watch BRL play. And there was a local junior club just down the road from us. We weren't allowed to play for club because we had school footy. So we only played at school. until I was about 16. That's when our family started playing for clubs. All my younger brothers, they benefited from me and my and my brother, who was about a year younger than me, to just nagging. So they were all able to play from the age of about 7 or 8 at the local club. So I just watched footy like all the time when I was a kid. Yeah, and Brisbane Rugby League was the ruler at the time. We watched the Sydney stuff as well, and you know, had our Sydney teams that we followed, but you know, the Brisbane competition was good enough. We didn't need the Sydney competition to get our kicks, so to speak.
So I don't want to age you, but I am interested to know, you know, how far you go back with watching the BRL and you know, Brisbane footy.
Yeah, well, I go back to we're starting our podcast from 1968, and that's pretty much where I go back to. So we have decided to put 10 years together. We're going to go through from 1908 all the way through to 1987, which is when just before the Broncos came in. And that's a neat package of 80 years. So we're going to do 8 seasons, and each season will comprise a decade. So we're going to start with the 68 through to 77, because a lot of people who played in that era are still with us. Some of them have gone, of course, but a lot of them are still with us, and we're hoping that we'll be able to pick up a lot of them and their families and friends to, you know, give them a bit of a kick and talk about why they made our lives such a joy when we were growing up. So,
can you tell me a bit about your club, the team you were following, and some of your favourite players growing up?
Sure, I can. So when I first started, I suppose 68, I was watching footy a little bit, but not a lot. But when I really got into it was 69 during the semi-final series, and Valleys were playing against Norths, and Valleys were the underdogs. So I supported Valleys. I went for the underdogs, and it was pretty good time to jump on board, because they lost that 69 grand final, but then won quite a stack of them through 70, 71, 72, 73, 74. So yeah, we had a good year in the 70s, yeah.
Who were some of the players with Valleys at that time?
Okay, so I guess when I first started watching, the guy that really stood out for me was Mick Retchelis. He was the Valleys captain at the time. He was a centre, and he, like, from my perspective, and I was only a kid, so I didn't really know anything, but I just thought he was fantastic, and I couldn't understand why he wasn't always the first guy picked for Australia, let alone picked for Queensland or whatever. So he was probably the guy that I thought was really terrific. And then as the years went by, he retired fairly soon after I started watching. I think 71 was his last year, but then Marty Scanlon came in, and he was just as good as a 5/8, and I honestly couldn't understand why he didn't play for Queensland more often. I really don't understand that. It's just it defies belief. But anyway, that's the way selections go. This doesn't always go the way that you think they should go. But yeah, they're probably the two guys that really stood out. But you know, I could name the whole Valleys team. That they were so good in those days. But it's also, there's so many other players in Brisbane who were really good, and it was just great to watch those guys play. I remember, so we lived in East's territory, not in Valleys territory, and I remember going to quite a lot of games at Langlands Park, which was East's home ground. So I saw a lot of East's guys play, and Des Morris was similar to Marty Scanlon and Mick Retchelis. You just wonder why he wasn't the first guy picked to play for Australia, and he never did play for Australia, which, you know, again, defies belief, but that's the way life goes sometimes.
And John Lang was at East, wasn't he, or did it take him a bit later?
He was, no. John Lang was at East pretty much at the same time. Yeah. And it was one of the things when you watched East and Valleys play, watching the hookers go around was just an absolute joy, because Johnny Lang was fantastic. He would tackle everything that moved, and he had a really good sniping game from dummy half, and he had, you know, great service. And then Hugh O'Doherty playing for Valleys was exactly the same. Mm. Johnny Lang would win a few more scrums, and in those days, winning scrums mattered.
It was the only stat kept.
Yeah, well, that's right. So he was the guy who, made all of the rep teams. But Davide was quite often on the bench. And when you're picking a small guy who plays hooker on the bench as a forward reserve, it says something about the type of player that he is. So, yeah, it was great watching those two guys playing against each other.
You mentioned rep footy. This was the era where, that imbalance between New South Wales and Queensland was really starting to show, obviously leading to State of Origin in 1980. How was the imbalance in terms of the competitions? Do you think in the 70s the BRL was still, holding its own compared to the New South Wales competition?
Well, I don't know. Like, you can't... Yeah, the BRL was as a standalone competition. So that's... that's a given because it was so popular up here that it was definitely a competition that was worth watching and worth being a part of and worth supporting. As far as the quality of Brisbane teams and Sydney teams, I guess some of my research that I've been doing in this, the decade that we're doing now, and that's pretty much when the AMCO Cup started up. And in the very early years of the AMCO Cup, the Brisbane teams were actually represented themselves rather than having a combined Brisbane team. And, a couple of those Brisbane teams made it through to quarterfinals in a couple of those years. So, there was some quality there. It was the way I put it down in my years looking back over it was that the intensity of New South Wales was higher. And because the intensity was higher, that's what pretty much what happened to Queensland against New South Wales. That there was just that intensity that lasted for 80 minutes, not 70 minutes. And, Queensland had held their own pretty much all the way through. And then the last 10 minutes, New South Wales would score 3 tries and win a game. Mm. Those kind of things happen. And I guess the other thing with rep footy too is that there was, from my perspective, there was a feeling that New South Wales players were better. And so even on those years when Queensland, there was one year, and I can't remember the year off the top of my head, but there was one year where New South Wales won the first game after Queensland had had a guy sent off, and then the next game was drawn, and then the third game was drawn, and then when they picked the test team, there wasn't a Queenslander in it, there was two guys on the bench. So, when you kind of look at it like that, you think, well, surely there's 4 or 5 guys there who could have made that team.
Yeah.
But that's the way that it goes. There's a set mindset, and the mindset, prevailed.
It's hard for me to really get a sense of what it was like. I'm a bit too young to. I remember when there were players in Origin who didn't play every week and I got to see them 3 times a year. I just remember that. But it was kind of later, seeing these weird names like, Wynnum Manly and Valleys and all these names of other teams. And then you're seeing they had a Rothmans medal and they had their own footy publications and all the rest of it. Growing up, were the Brisbane players, were they like the football celebrities to you? Like, what did you know about the Sydney players?
Well, growing up, I got Rugby League Week all the time, so we knew about the Sydney players because there was not media saturation like we get now, but there was certainly media saturation for that time. So, we knew who those guys were, particularly the better players. We knew who they were. And a lot of those better players were guys who had played in Queensland and gone down to New South Wales as well. So we kind of followed them and, kept abreast of what was going on in that respect as well. To answer the first part of that question, as far as being guys, BRL players being the rock stars of the day, yeah, they were. They definitely were. It was it was amazing to be able to walk down the street and see somebody who you'd seen playing on the field just the weekend before, and wow, look, there's Des Morris walking down the street. So yeah, it was pretty cool, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, some of the all-time greats were playing in that competition in the 80s. It's something I'm particularly interested in. When it seems like you see all these names, Lewis and Miles Meninga, it seems like it would have been like a really strong competition, but it seems like this is where teams were going bankrupt and, the divide between New South Wales and Queensland was becoming really wide leading to the Broncos. So did you get a sense of something changing, you know, into the 80s?
Yeah, look, it was happening all the way through the 70s because there was always talk of teams running out of money or clubs running out of money or being in, you know, dire straits as far as finances were concerned. So that was something that was just continually mentioned. It was always in the back of your minds. And as a Valley supporter, Valleys were one of those clubs that struggled. And it could have been because they were so good. They had so many good players to pay that, you know, that's why they kept running towards the wall. And the fact that we didn't have those poker machines and big clubhouses to back up the clubs made it a whole lot more difficult. So, you know, we're talking about a competition that was run on chook raffles and doubles, really. That's pretty much the extent of it. So I suppose to keep running the way that they did was pretty good going in the sense. But, I got that sense all the time that there was trouble brewing as far as money was concerned. Even when I was a kid, you worried about what was going on every time you read those kind of things in the paper.
Yeah. I realise now I'm kind of harping on, you know, the end and the bad times, I guess, because that's where my headspace is in terms of all my research. So I do want to get back to what the podcast is doing and, you know, the celebration of Brisbane footy. But just to stay on this note just a bit longer, I know you're quite anti the Broncos, and I'm interested to get a sense of where that comes from and what you were thinking in 1987 when all that was going on.
Well, it wasn't so much 1987, Michael. So that's part of it, I guess, because it didn't take long once the Broncos came in before Valleys folded. But, you know, Valleys were on that way anyway. They had that short-lived amalgamation with the Tweedheads, Seagulls, and then they had another short-lived amalgamation with Caboolture, and it just, you know, neither of them really worked. Both of them were thinking along the right lines. They had to get out of that landlocked area that they were in the inner city to be able to attract some juniors and some extra people from, you know, from outside. But they just didn't have the time to do it, and it ended up folding as a senior club. I mean, their junior club still runs now and doing a great job at the moment. I'm actually the secretary this year at Valleys Juniors, which has been an eye-opening experience. But watching the way that the people at that club work, they're really amazing people. And I know that they're not the only club that does that kind of amazing stuff. There's junior clubs all over the country who are doing that kind of work without a whole lot of help or recognition. So that's what keeps the game going. It's not the NRL, that's for sure, because the NRL wouldn't happen without those kids playing the game in those junior clubs to be able to play at a NRL level later on.
No, totally. I'm actually, my son has just started in under sixes at Renown here in Sydney, and so I'm getting a sense of that all for the first time, and it you really do feel that, you know, that you're part of the lifeblood of the game when you're involved in a local club and junior footy.
You do. It's certainly something that's given me a real kick this year. And just talking, hearing you say that your son started at Renown, it brings me back to the Broncos question. So the main reason that I'm a bit anti-Broncos is because I actually support St. George.
Oh, right.
And so 92, 93 didn't, didn't endear me to the Broncos.
when did your St. George fandom start?
Pretty much the same time as Valleys. So there was a semi-final and, you know, St. George were underdogs, Souths were expected to win and Souths did. And so
you just missed one golden era with the Dragons, but you made up for it with Valleys.
That's correct. Exactly. I missed one and, but I picked up another. Yeah.
I think we've had a few conversations online and that sort of thing, but I really became aware of you when you were a guest on our friend Dave Hunter's Hypothetic RL episode, which, just an aside, that was the moment listening to that where that show went from just a kind of fun distraction to something that could be quite important. Anyone who hasn't listened to that episode, I'll put a link out when this episode goes live. But a fantastic chat you had with Dave looking at an alternate history of, you know, what might have happened if the Pokies came in to Queensland and, you know, the Broncos didn't enter in 88 and things broke down a different way. It seems that the way you ended up was basically that whatever alternate reality you could dream up leads you to eventually some kind of national comp or some kind of merging of Brisbane and Sydney. I'm just wondering if you have any opinions on what do you think the best breakdown of, if the two competitions were merging on equal strength, you know, like would you pick, you know, four Brisbane teams, six Sydney, or what would be your ideal split?
Oh, that's a hard question off the top of my head. I think you're probably going to go with four Brisbane teams, and it probably just would have happened. So Valleys folded, you know, in the 90s, and Brothers pretty much around the same time. So there's two that are gone out of those six already. Ipswich were looking to come in. Gold Coast were in. They were part of the state league as well as Ipswich. Redcliffe's not really in Brisbane. It's outside of Brisbane. So you could start looking at all of those satellite clubs as being, you know, particular satellite clubs and not particularly Brisbane clubs. And then similarly in Sydney, where you look at Parramatta, Illawarra, Canberra, Newcastle, like you'd keep all of those that are, and Penrith, all of those that are particularly outside Sydney satellite clubs, and then, you know, look at what do you do with the rest of them? Do you move them somewhere else to get this national competition happening? That's probably, as far as being ideal is concerned, that's the way I would go. And even if it meant that, you know, St. George would have been somewhere else, like, you know, Townsville would have been, say, Townsville Dragons instead of St. George Dragons or something like that. That's the way I always looked at it when I was, I suppose in my early 20s, I used to think, why don't they just do that? Like, just move them somewhere. I know that's going to be painful, but it's better than dying.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah. So that's the way I always thought that it should have worked. And I expected that they would have teams across the country. Like, I expected that there'd be a team in Perth. I expected that there'd be a team in North Queensland. And I expected that there'd be one in Melbourne and probably Adelaide as well.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit sad that here we are in 2021 talking about a second Brisbane team instead of, you know, what we once had and probably should have again. But let's get to the podcast itself. Can you just, for our listeners, kind of set up, you know, what it's all about and what we can expect?
I'll do my best. So basically what we're going to do is have a chat about the year that was. So the first episode is 1968. So we're going to have a chat about the year that was 1968. There'll be some things that are not football related. And I'll give you a teaser, I guess, that 68 was the Olympic Games in Mexico City. And Peter Norman from Australia came second in the 200 meters final. And that's the Black Power salute thing. So we'll chat about that. It's not a lot, but that gets an airplay. And, you know, everything else that was big in 68 or that was big in Brisbane in 68 will get some kind of airplay. But then we dive into what happened in the footy. You know, we sort of talk about the people who were playing the game. We talk about the clubs that played the game, and we talk about that actual competition and how it transpired. Hopefully it'll be interesting. I think it will be. I know that there's plenty of things that are in there that are worth having a listen to. I think the Barry Muir story is a great one to hear, and that's we dive into that in 1968 because there are a couple of things in 68 that that pinpoint Barry Muir as somebody to talk about. So, yeah, we do that in 1968, and I think that's a pretty good episode. And then after that episode's finished, the next week we're going to dive back into 68 and just talk about the players. And we know that we're not the be-all and end-all as far as, you know, people who know what's what about Brisbane Rugby League, but we're going to open up a BRL Moments in Time Hall of Fame. And basically the idea for to do that is to just look at, well, who stood out in that year, and see whether or not over the course of the 10 years that there's, you know, a group of players who stood out so much that you'd say, well, those guys should be in the Hall of Fame. And let's recognise that, that Brisbane had some pretty decent talent running around. I can say that in 68 and through the 70s, there were plenty of guys playing in Brisbane who never had an opportunity to play for Australia, and they probably should have, because they were equally as good as, or in some cases better than, the guys that that from New South Wales who did play for Australia. So that's pretty much the way that we're going to go. And then we'll occasionally have interviews with players who played the game as well. So we have an interview, and we'll run them on our Hall of Fame episode. So we'll have our first episode about the year that was, and then the next episode is a little bit shorter, so we'll tack an interview onto the end of that every second week.
I'm really excited for this. It's a chance for us to try to shift our Sydney focus. I always have to remind myself as I go about my research and our podcast that Sydney isn't the be-all and end-all of rugby league. It's hard when you grow up with that mentality, but this podcast will, for me, be a necessary corrective to that. So I'm really looking forward to what you've got in store. I will say, as in our first incarnation of the Rugby League Digest, our own Hall of Fame, very difficult concept to nail down the parameters of. I think we had, you know, wildly shifting goalposts on what constituted a Hall of Famer and all the rest of it. So it's murky territory you're wading into.
Oh, it's definitely murky territory. We've already shifted goalposts in our in our conversations, but we think that we've nailed them to a particular spot at this point in time. Anyway, we're trying to do it a certain way. Like most of our research, in fact, I'd say 95% of our research is newspaper based. So, because when we go back to 1908 and, you know, even through the 30s and 40s, there aren't guys around who saw those blokes play. So we can't rely on them to give us a feel. We can rely on our own eyes and what we saw through the 70s and through the 80s to say, well, these guys should be there. But then you're changing the goalposts for those blokes that you didn't see. So everything that we do is we think that we've got parameters that are sorted out for it. And we know that we're not an official thing. It's just a way to be able to recognise some of the guys who played, to celebrate that that era, that competition that ran, because it was a pretty good one and there were pretty good players playing it.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of had this save for the end, but I think it's a good place to discuss it when you talk about a Hall of Fame. I've seen a lot of talk online about the best way to, you know, recognize BRL records. Like, there are some people who argue that, you know, 100 first grade games is 100 first grade games, you know, whether it's in Sydney or Brisbane, and those records should be combined. There are some who say, well, no, we've got to do a better job of recognizing them, but they're separate competitions, so they should exist as separate records. I wonder if you've thought much about that, and what do you think the best practice for that would be?
Yeah, I've thought about it a lot, and I honestly think the best practice is that you recognise all of them, because if you're playing cricket, it doesn't matter if you're playing cricket in South Africa or in England or in Australia. If you're playing a first-class match, it's a first-class match. Mm. So in Australia during, well, for any time from 1908 up until 1987, there were two major rugby league competitions. So if you played an A-grade game in one of those competitions, that's a first-class match. You get an A-grade game attached to your record, and that's what I believe should happen. I can't understand that there isn't a belief, or that there isn't a push to really make that happen, because, you know, Wally Lewis and Mel Meninga, for example, you know, they get so many 100 games, whatever the 100 is. I think Mel's got 200 and something games for Canberra. Mm. But what about all those games that he played for Souths? And it wasn't like he was playing nobody when he was playing for Souths. So I just can't work it out.
And he'll be the first one to tell you that the footy was just as hard playing for Brisbane Souths as when he came down to Canberra.
Oh, yeah, of course it was, because there were plenty of guys around who wanted to win the game, just the same as there are plenty of guys around in Sydney who wanted to win the game. I mean, like I said earlier, that I think it's that intensity thing that you know, just with that slight edge of intensity, and that's probably because of, you know, you had better players there for longer periods because you've had money there for longer than we've had money here. And so, you know, there was just players would gravitate from the country into the city for the money, and people would gravitate from Queensland down to Sydney for the money. And I'm not denying that it wasn't a better competition. What I'm saying is that Brisbane was still a good competition, and it was, you know, there were players and clubs in Brisbane that would hold their own in Sydney, like, easily. Like, that Valleys team of the 70s would easily hold its own in Sydney competition. It wouldn't be running last, that's for sure. Yeah.
Can you imagine getting paid to do what you actually love doing? Tell us what those things are, and we'll tell you how you can do them in the Army. Go on, get paid for doing what you love. Search Do What You Love.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This, I think I kind of know what your answer is going to be based on what you're saying, but I'm interested to know in what was the impetus for getting this going and you know, starting this podcast.
I've considered it for quite a while. When I first came across podcasts, which is ages ago, like years ago, and I considered doing it, but I never really had the time to do it, and I don't have the time now. But I just thought, look, if it's going to be done, I don't think anyone else is going to do it, and I just believe that it should be done. And I had a real push towards it towards the end of last year, and I took on the secretary job at Valleys at the end of last year, and just having that reconnection with some of the old boys at Valleys, and it just pushed it even further that it's definitely something that has to happen. There are guys around who played the game who people don't even know that they played the game, and you know, they've got a story to tell, and the story's worth hearing. I found out, you know, I didn't know it, but my cousin's husband played in the BRL. I didn't know that. And he was playing for Norths when Clive Churchill was up here coaching. So he's on the list to interview, and I can't wait to do that interview. Yeah. You know, we're going to chat about stuff that I had no idea that he was involved in. So it'll be great. There are stories that really deserve to be told, and I'm hoping that we can tell some of them.
Yeah, I've, you know, got in front of me now my copy of Steve Haddon's Our Game.
Oh, yeah. Good book.
So good. In addition to being like a brilliant reference book, just a beautiful thing to look at. It's one of my favorites. But just when I was when I got that and was going through it, I'm seeing these names, like, you know, the Belewski brothers that played in you know, like the teens, and these kind of players that it seemed like there's a story there that we've just never heard.
Yep, there is a story there, and I can't remember what year it is, but that story gets told. It's a beauty. It's a cracker. Yeah, that story is a good one. It's definitely worth being told. So Mick Belewski was one of the first Kangaroos, and him and a couple of his brothers all played. Most of them, they mostly played in Bundaberg, but they all played for Queensland, and a couple of them played for Australia as well. So, yeah, so that's a pretty good family there to talk about. And there's another family, the Heidkes, who were also from Bundaberg. So Wilhelm Heidke was also a member of the first Kangaroos. He was from Bundaberg too, and him and a couple of brothers also came down. And I'm pretty sure that Belewski's and Heidke's all played for Winter Manly when Winter Manly first came into the league in I think 1917 or, you know, somewhere down there. I can't remember because my focus at the moment is is from the 60s to the 70s. But, yeah, I have done that one, and that story gets told. It's a goodie, yeah.
And were these kind of names and other, you know, names that you'll see along the way, were these stories that were familiar to you, or is this something that you're, like, really discovering as you go along with the research?
No, it's all stuff that I'm discovering. And one of the beauties of it is when you see family names that crop up and you think, oh, holy cow, is that related? And you do a little bit of ancestry research and, you know, you can sort of link families together from, you know, back in the early days up to, you know, playing in through the 70s and stuff. So there's some links like that happen at, it really sort of warms the heart to see that link of generations coming through the game. Yeah, there's some good stories that go through the game like that.
And I don't know if this question is going to be interesting to anyone other than me, but I'm really interested in it. So, you know, I mentioned Our Game, which is like a great source for me. You mentioned that, you know, a lot of your research comes from the newspapers. I'm just really interested to get a sense of your research process and you know, how much detail you go into and what sort of sources you're looking at.
Yeah, well, mostly I'm looking at newspaper sources. That's pretty much all of it. There are a couple of times where I get things that might come from somewhere else, but I haven't used Our Game, for example, because Steve Haddon has a disclaimer in there about not using his stuff unless there's approval given. So I didn't even I asked him if we could you know, use it, and he said that there was a disclaimer in the front of the book. So I thought, okay, well, that's fine. I'll just leave that out, and I'll just go with the research, because the whole point of what I'm trying to do is to look at what happened from day to day. And Steve's book doesn't really go through what happened from day to day anyway. So his book is fantastic, and I absolutely love reading it. And I've read it through a couple of times. So, you know, that's sort of good. But, yeah, our research is newspaper-based. And there's another Steve up here in Brisbane, Steve Ricketts, who's was a newspaper man. He played in the BRL for a little while as well, and he's a rugby league historian up here in Queensland, and he's helped out a bit with that. He's been able to help me out with some archives for newspapers and things like that. So he's been a real fountain of information for me, which has been terrific. But otherwise, it's just, you know, head up to the local state library and get out your microfiche and have a look through what's going on there, or, you know, with the old ones, you can get online and use it there. So that's pretty much most of the research that I've done is through that way. And then occasionally, particularly with the older ones, because I've already sort of outlined what we're doing from 1908 through to 1917, I use ancestry a fair bit with that, just to find out, you know, where did some of these guys come from? What did they do? How did they, you know, what's their story? Because you don't always find the story in the newspaper. So that's the other part of it. But certainly for all of the up-to-date things, sort of, so through the 60s and 70s, and it's all newspaper-based because it gives you the day-to-day story. And, you know, some of those stories that you can follow through, you know, you might get 8 to 10 articles written about it over the course of a couple of weeks, and, you know, so you can sort of tell that story as it unfolds.
It's funny. I mean, having gone through a similar, you know, research journey, you really do get a sense of a season when you go through, you know, like, you know, it might be a season's worth of rugby league weeks or the newspaper articles in chronological order. You really do feel like you're reliving the season in real time. Did you get a sense of that in your research?
I did. Look, there's a couple of times. Like, there's one time in particular, and I'm not going to give away the story, but it's a goodie. I was at Langlands Park, and there was a particular incident that occurred, and I remember it as crystal clear as from when I was a kid. And you know, I was going through all of this research through the 70s and it never cropped up. And I thought, I can't tell that story because I really don't know when it happened. And just last week I found it.
Yeah, right.
It came up in the newspaper and I've gone, oh, fantastic. I can tell the story. So, you know, there's things like that, that occur. And you're right. You get that sense of what's been transpiring. And, you know, we talk about the guys who win the Rothmans Medal, and we talk about the guys who win the Courier Mail Best and Fairest Awards for the year, and you know, you can see that unfolding as you go along. Yeah, I think it's a good ride to go on, Mike. Yeah, we're enjoying it.
And so, what's the plan once you get through the 68 to 77? Are you going back to the start at that point, or are you pressing on to the 80s? Straight after that.
Well, yeah, it may be that public opinion will tell us what to do in that regard. But my initial plan is to go back to the beginning, and then to sort of jump around a little bit and you know, pull bits out here and there. So I've done the first 10 years, and I've done, I can't remember if it's I think it's the 40s and 50s. So we've done a fair bit of research, you know, to get us ready to be where we are. But research doesn't mean that you've got a podcast ready to go. It just means that you've got a background to be able to build it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned it's not just you doing it. Can you tell me a bit about your co-host?
Yeah, so the guy I've got got with me, he's younger than I am, so he doesn't go back as anywhere near as far as I go back, because I quite often during this first series have been asking him, so do you remember that, Dave? Nah, Chris. he's a bit younger than me, but he has a passion for the BRL, and I was having a chat to him just this afternoon. We were recording an episode, and he was saying, I said to him, Dave, I don't know even who you followed. Like, you've never brought that up. And he said that he didn't really follow anybody. He just used to, you know, he used to like Wally Lewis, so he went for Valleys. And then Wally went to Winner Manly, so he went for Winner Manly. And he used to like watching Des Morris play, so he went for East. Like, he just, went for whoever the players were. He liked Mal Meninga playing, so he went for Souths while Mal was playing, so... Yeah, he just used to follow the clubs and follow the game. He just loved the game as well. Dave's got a particular knack of being able to speak in a different way. So he's really good to bounce off. We've sort of started to gel as far as the way that we present things. But he's a teacher where my daughter goes to school. And last year when we had all the homeschooling stuff, I saw a completely different side of Dave. We've had a couple of conversations about the BRL and, you know, about music and things like that. So we clicked already. But watching him do some of those remote teaching things for it, he was hilarious, and he had all these different voices and different routines and stuff. So we don't necessarily get the hilarious Dave, but when we're quoting from the newspaper, Dave does the newspaper voices. So he'll... You know, he'll be the quotes. It's not exactly seamless yet, but today we did a whole lot better than we've done in the previous couple. So, yeah.
And have you had any contact with some of the BRL clubs that are still in existence today?
I have, yeah. So the guy who does the history stuff at Winner Manly's been pretty helpful, I have contacted, pretty much contacted most of the other clubs, and there's a couple of other clubs who have said, yeah, well, we've got so-and-so to contact, you know, let us know when you want to know something and they'll be able to help you out. So at the moment, I'm just going full steam ahead to try to get this first season in the can, so that I can then have time to be able to go back and contact clubs with a little bit of breathing space and find out what they can offer. So yeah, I've got four, I think, of the eight clubs at the time have all been able to help out with that. So that's been good.
I'd just like to say good luck in the breathing space. I've been chasing breathing space for about 3 years, and I've nowhere near found it yet. So I wish you well on that.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And certainly, Michael, that I don't think I'm doing anywhere near what you guys do. So, I don't want to be.
So, I mean, maybe you've answered this in your allegiance and the era of glory in the early 70s, but are there any particular seasons or particular eras that you're really looking forward to diving into?
There's certain parts that I really look forward to diving into. So I loved doing 1908 through to 1917. That was probably the most fun I've ever had as far as just reading stuff. And I was just completely got lost in it. So that was good. I really enjoyed doing that. We've just recently finished doing a couple of episodes, and there's a couple there that come up pretty early in the piece that I really enjoyed doing. I think that the 1970 season is fantastic. The finish of 1970, you couldn't write a better script. It was fantastic. So I'm not going to give it away, but there was stuff that happened towards the end of the season before grand final time, and it was an extra time grand final. So, it's a great season to chat about. So that one comes to mind as being one that stands out. I'm really looking forward, actually, without Valleys being involved as well, I'm really looking forward to finishing off when West and Redcliffe played the grand final, which I think was in 75. I'm looking forward to doing that one. And it won't be this season because it's 1979, but I can't wait to do the 1979 one where Valleys had a great year and won their grand final 26-0 with Wally Lewis, Ross Strudwick and Peter McWhirter at the scrum base, just pretty much taking all before them. So, I'm looking forward to that one too.
What was it like being a Valleys fan and seeing Wally Lewis emerge?
Oh, that was that was amazing. He just stood out so much, and I think, and I'm pretty sure that Wally will tell you this himself, that playing with Ross Strudwick was one of the best things that could have happened to him, because Strudwick didn't play pretty, shall we say. He was as tough as nails, and he made sure that Wally was as tough as nails as well, and he pretty much turned out that way. Some of the best parts of Wally Lewis was his touch, his brilliance, and his vision. But some of the other parts was the tackle on Darryl Williams that we all remember for Australia and New Zealand, where that kind of stuff just needs to happen. And as a Queensland supporter, you see it so many times, the try that he scored in 1989 when Queensland had all those players off injured in the State of Origin game. He just put the state on his back and do it. I mean, one of the things that stands out in my memory was I was driving home, and I used to live in the inner city in Brisbane, just near Lang Park, and I was driving home one night before a State of Origin game and saw a guy walking to Lang Park, and he had a Queensland jersey on with a number 6 on the back, and he had God written on the top of as the name. So I think that kind of sums up. You watch Wally play, and when we did watch him play on TV pretty much every week, because in those days when Valleys were playing so well, they were on the match of the round, whether it be the Saturday or the Sunday, they pretty much got there every week. So you got to see him. And he was fantastic. He really was.
And it seems like it was pretty instant once State of Origin hit that he became the Queensland god.
I think Gordon Tallis who said it, just said that, with Wally, it was a case of if you needed a kick that went downfield and, put the opposition on the back foot, he'd do it for you. If you needed a tackle that had to be made, he'd make it. If you needed a run that had to be made and, to turn the tables, he'd make the run. If you needed a pass that needed to put somebody in space, he'd throw the pass to put somebody in space. Whatever had to be done, he could do it. And most often he did. And that's pretty much what sums him up. It's not so much that he was Bob Fulton's brilliance or, you know, you could rattle off all of these different guys. It's not so much that he had Chang's sidestep or he just... He could do so much, and most often he did, and he did it when you needed it, and that was the thing that made him so good. That's the thing that, that endeared him to us as Queenslanders, that's for sure.
Yeah. I can't believe how much of my childhood I spent just hating Wally Lewis, and then, you know, you grow up and you realise, why are you fighting against greatness like that? But, you know, I think State of Origin wouldn't be where it is without him and without that rivalry, so it's kind of the way it had to be. But just to finish up, I wanted to kind of come forward and look at what's going on in football today, in particular this question of the second Brisbane team, and interested to get your thoughts on what you think the best path forward is.
Oh, yeah. Look, I don't know. I have a vested interest, but I'm not the only one with the vested interest. So there's a few different... a few different places that want to be that second team. So you've got the Ipswich corridor, the Western corridor, and I think that would be a really good way to go because it's not Brisbane. You know, it's sort of outside Brisbane. Then you've got the Easts one, and Easts are such a powerful club, but the problem is that their mascot is not Easts. And so you lose that link back to the BRL, back to that Brisbane time. So... I don't know if I can properly go with that one either. Then you've got the Brisbane Bombers, and I'll come back to the Bombers. You've got Redcliffe, and I think that Redcliffe is probably the way to go because it brings a link to the BRL. I didn't particularly like Redcliffe when I was growing up because they weren't Valleys. They were a different club, but, you know, that's the club that I would support. That's the bid that I would support because that's the link to the BRL that would go into that that competition. So for me, that's the way I look at it. And for Easts, if they were able to take the Tiger with the, you know, black chevron, just the Balmain jersey, if they were able to take that into the NRL, I'd probably go with them. But they can't take that. They have to go with a different emblem. And that for me, that just loses the link to the BRL. So Redcliffe would be the team for me. But for mine... I can't see why the Brisbane Bombers aren't grabbing a hold of somebody like, and I know I'm going to sound biased here, but somebody like Valleys, where it's Fortitude Valley, it's in the city, or right beside the city. It brings that real rivalry with the Broncos. The Broncos in the city, and you know, Valleys in the valley, and so you've got that real us and them kind of situation. I can't see why they wouldn't grab a hold of something that has all of that history. And if you don't want to do it with Valleys, then do it with Brothers. Like Brothers, you got the Brothers confraternities all the way up the coast. And I just can't understand why they want to go with something that's completely new, completely foreign, and it's got an AFL name. It just doesn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I really struggle with that one. You know, my co-host Andrew is always banging the Ipswich drum. But I don't really know about, you know, Ipswich, whether it's big enough, whether it could sustain a team, all the rest of it. Do you have an opinion on Ipswich or, a kind of Ipswich / Toowoomba, something like that?
Yeah, no, Toowoomba's too far away. I don't think you'd put the two of them together. The Ipswich one is definitely viable. It's one of the biggest growing areas. It's fastest growing areas. And it's definitely a viable situation. The problem with the Ipswich one is that they've kind of gone quiet and they don't seem to be really pushing their own barrow much anymore. Redcliffe's the one that you hear about the most. And you know, the other problem with Ipswich is it doesn't have that really rich BRL link. It's got a sort of a BRL link, but not the rich one that goes through in the, you know, 60s and 70s that Redcliffe has. But... You know, Ipswich won the grand final in 1910, and so, you know, why not? They've got a BRL link. There's plenty of guys from Ipswich. Sorry.
I was going to say, the only stipulation is Alfie's got to jump ship and run the water for Ipswich if they get up.
Yeah, and Kevy's got to come across and coach as well. Is that the part of the plan too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so look, Ipswich is definitely a viable goer. But yeah, for me, I'd be going Redcliffe because that's got the link to the BRL. And if the Bombers wanted to do something that was sensible and grab a hold of one of those foundation clubs that aren't around anymore, even West, like West aren't around, you know, in that top tier anymore, you know, go ahead and grab one of those old clubs that have been there forever and, you know, sort of take one of their brands forward. That's the way I'd be going.
Yeah, well, interesting time. So, we're all looking forward to seeing it, how it all resolves. More importantly, I'm so excited for the new podcast, and I'm sure all our listeners will jump on board as well. It's a great thing you're doing, and can't wait to dive into BRL history. So, BRL Moments in Time, you can download it at presumably all the usual places.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure it's definitely on Spotify. It's definitely on Apple Podcasts, and it's on quite a few others as well, because I've had a lot of the emails to say that we've been approved in so many other places, but I don't use them, so I'm not really sure what they're called. So, but certainly the big ones is Spotify and Apple. It's definitely there. I've downloaded them from both of those myself. We've got a few pre-season episodes out at the moment, which are just giving you a taste for what's to come.
Okay, awesome. So everyone jump on board that. Chris, thanks so much for joining me tonight. This has been a great illuminating chat for me, so I appreciate the time.
Oh, thanks very much, Michael. I really appreciate you giving me the time to have the chat, and I certainly didn't expect it to go this long, so it's been terrific. I've loved chatting to you and to hear your voice at the other end of the phone instead of at the other end of the podcast. It's kind of giving me goosebumps a little bit. So, yeah, thanks very much.
Oh, and it's been great, and sorry to keep you. We had a little daylight saving mix-up, but glad we got through it all. Yeah. So, thanks a lot, Chris.
No worries. Thanks to you.
Feel like you need more time for all of it? With a Microsoft 365 family subscription, you can help make the most of your time. Manage things you care about, like your budget and family schedules. Keep your family's memories secured with 1 terabyte of OneDrive cloud storage. Plus, have peace of mind with location alerts in the free Microsoft Family Safety app. Get started at Microsoft365.com/learn more.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.